If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
You're listening to Steve Bertrand on Books. All right, what's the average millennial's take on politics, or how does the average baby boomer react to new technology in the workplace? I have an idea those might be forbidden questions in Harvard professor Todd Rose's world. His new book is called The End of Average. He joins us now to explain himself. Todd, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
All right, how did I do? Are those questions the sorts of things where, I mean, maybe that's not exactly what you're writing about, but in a way, when it comes to averages, you argue that we're overplaying things a bit.
Yeah, that's right. I think that my claim would be that, you know, averages have a place, but when it comes down to trying to think about individuals, whether it's someone we're trying to hire or assess performance, that using group averages fails pretty miserably.
I love this. I want you to tell me about this 19th century guy, Adolf, is it Quetelet?
Quetelet. Yeah.
Quetelet, okay. Who knew that the BMI index goes back to the 19th century? But tell me about Quetelet.
Yeah, so Quetelet is the guy that actually invents the average man. I couldn't believe it. I thought it was written on stone tablets, you know. But no, he was an astronomer back in the early 19th century, and astronomy makes use of averages a lot, and they're pretty useful there. And they were living through the era of census data for the first time, and people are trying to make how to make sense of society. And he's the first person that decides, hey, what we should do is stop thinking about individuals because they're way too messy, and just focus on this average person that emerges when you smush everyone together, basically. And he took it one step further, which is he thought the average wasn't just a mathematical idea, but that it was like divine, like it was perfection.
Right. So here comes this guy at a time when data collection's coming into its own, and he puts together these numbers and comes up with sort of the average man. Now, today we sort of judge ourselves by the average man, but we don't really want to be so. In that day, that was the goal, to be absolutely average.
Yeah, that basically you could be essentially predictably mediocre. Right? Like averages were pretty good for bureaucrats to manage societies and things like that. But yeah, Quetelet really decided the goal was that nature was striving for us to all be average and that government should help that process along.
But the thing is that it was a whole new way of thinking, you know. I mean, it's nothing new to say the average person does this or the group does this. But at that time, the idea, I mean, talk to me a little bit about what he did with the numbers with suicide, because he looked at those and came up with this idea of an average that seemed to be sort of shocking to people at that time.
Yeah, yeah. So when he starts calculating averages on everything he could get his hands on, and he finds that in Belgium, the suicide rate was pretty stable on average from year to year. And, you know, to us that seems, yeah, okay, fine.
Right, we'd accept that. We'd expect it.
Yeah, it was people just, their minds is like blown. Like, how could something so private and irrational like suicide be stable? But then, of course, Quetelet decides that it turns out that the average man was suicidal to an average extent. So we all had some suicidal right. Propensity.
The name of your book is The End of Average. So I would imagine you're making the argument that this is a bad idea and that we should measure ourselves in different ways. Explain for me what those different ways would be.
Yeah, so basically when we think about how we measure ourselves, we think about three basic principles of individuality, right, to understand ourselves. The first is what we call jaggedness. So if this idea of that the characteristics we care about, like size and, you know, talent and things like that, are always multidimensional, and you're going to have a collection of strengths and weaknesses, every single person. So it means you can't reduce someone to a single score. So, you know, but we do that all the time, right? Like, we admit people to schools based on SAT scores, things like
right,
that.
Right, right.
So we push for more multidimensional assessments, and there's plenty of good examples of that. The second one is context principle, that you really can't talk about performance or talent independent of the immediate environment. And so things like job descriptions, right, must be a good communicator. No one's just generically a good communicator, right? So you need to contextualize the performance you're looking for. The final one we call the pathways principle, which is that people differ in the pace and sequence with which they achieve goals. and it's guaranteed that there's always more than one right pathway to get to a successful outcome. So things like career ladders really make no sense.
But the thing is, Todd, is that it seems to me that those averages and finding the typical and finding what SAT score fits well for your institution, it's a great shortcut. And without those shortcuts, it seems like we could be working forever and never get to the results we need.
Yeah, so it does feel a little bit like if you let go of those familiar notions that it would be kind of anarchy, right? Like,
sure.
Or just really complex. But actually what we find is it's that when you actually look at your specific context, so in my book I talk about a whole range of companies that have actually shifted from averages to individuality, they actually find metrics pretty quickly that are predicting how individuals do in their company. And so, for example, Google found that SAT scores actually don't predict at all, and yet they had been relying on that for a decade. So, in fact, while it might be a little more complicated sometimes, the false simplicity of a one-dimensional score, the trade-off isn't worth it, right? You're hiring the wrong people.
So, it strikes me as I'm talking to you that maybe I'm talking a little bit like the people did in Quetelet's time when they were aghast by suicide numbers. I mean, I'm sitting here saying, how could we ever do it any differently? And that's what Quetelet introduced to us in the 1900s.
Yeah, and I think we all are grappling with it, right? We're so used to a whole entire society that's been built around average, right? It's either how close you approximate it or how far you can get above it, right, that matters. And so for generations, we've not thought of ourselves in any other way. But the truth is, in all aspects of our society, we're shifting, we know it doesn't work, and we're shifting to something different. So I don't know a single person who's happy with average-based medicine, right? You want to show up and have your doctor understand your health and diseases on your terms.
Sure. But we also live by average-based medicine, right? I mean, at my age, my cholesterol level should be A, or my heart rate should be B. And I guess that doesn't do well unless the doctor takes time to know me, learn my jaggedness, the term you use, and addresses me individually. That's what we're talking about.
That's right. And so, the whole field of medicine is pushing really hard to get towards as personalized level as possible, knowing that just group averages can be a rough heuristic, but in a lot of cases, they actually are pretty poor predictors of individual outcomes.
All right, so is this the science of individuality that we're talking about?
Yeah. So it's a little bit of a paradox, right? A science of individuality, but in fact, this is where in every field that deals with human beings, in medicine and human performance, where we've gotten access to bigger data, we've realized that when you start by averaging everything out, it often creates insights that apply to nobody at all.
Right.
And so instead, what we do is we look at individual patterns and we group from there. And so every breakthrough in, say, cancer research in the last decade has come from this new approach.
What do you tell someone then who's running an HR department or a CEO of a company and they're confronted with this, the idea that average doesn't exist and sort of building for average or expecting average is no way to operate a business? How do they begin to turn that around?
Yeah, no, it seems like a monumental task. And what I would say is that there are actually incredible bright spots out there, companies that are doing this and actually consulting firms that are doing this. But until you get rid of this average-based lens, you don't see them. They're on the fringe. For example, you want to hire someone better? There's a group, the Lou Adler Group, invented performance-based hiring, which simply states, define the contextualized performance you want, then find the people that can do that. It seems so obvious, right? They're just absolutely crushing it in terms of success rates. And so you could hire someone different right there. You want to assess yearly reviews, look at what Deloitte's doing, getting rid of one-dimensional scoring into four simple questions. So there's all kinds of better ways to do things, but the mindset thing is going to be the thing that holds us back.
Is this the beginning of a fundamental change in the way we measure ourselves? I mean, do you see this accelerating and becoming normal 50, 60 years from now?
Yeah, I do, because I think there's the economic driver, right, for this kind of knowledge-based economy have, where we need more and more kinds of talent. I think we have the moral imperative in medicine to get to personalized medicine, and we have an education system where the public now thinks the goal is to nurture the talent of every individual kid rather than batch process.
Yeah, I could talk to you about education forever, too. You want to throw out the idea of a diploma.
Oh, it makes absolutely no sense that everyone goes to college and stays there for the exact same amount of time, and you get some undifferentiated diploma when it's such a fuzzy signal to employers. I'm a big believer in competency-based credentials.
Yeah. So the idea is you would get a certificate in marketing or in economics in general, and you might do it at your own pace because rather than the average number of seat hours you need to master a subject, each person does it at their own speed. They might do some parts of it very quickly and others of it very slowly. So why judge everyone by one time frame, by one number of hours in a classroom on a subject?
Yeah, and look, I work at a university. I know why it's easier for us, right? I get it. But if it's about creating systems that allow each person to develop to their full potential, it just doesn't make any sense, right?
It'd be chaos, Todd. How could you be a third year student when it could be a 12-year program?
Yeah. Well, you know what? It's our job to figure out how to be flexible around that, and I think that the talent results that we'll see as a society will make it worth it.
I've got faith in you. Harvard professor Todd Rose, the name of the book, The End of Average. Listen, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to Steve Bertrand on Books.